time.
Hi, everybody. I hope you can hear me this time.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, the Starfinder News Reviews and Interviews podcast. I'm Vanessa Hoskins, and I am joined by...
Alex Agunis.
And James.
Who writes Code Switch? We are here to talk about the Vanguard today, a class that I'm actually super excited about because it's right up my alley of the kinds of characters I like to play, really rough and tumble in your face melee types. Alex, let's just dive right in. Give us the basic information about the Vanguard.
You got it. The Vanguard is a combatant array class, which means that it has a base attack bonus that's equal to its level. It also has a good fortitude save and a good reflex save, but it doesn't have a good will save, which is something that sets it apart from both the soldier and the Solarian, who both have good fort and will but poor reflex. So if you want to be a punch girl who dodges all the blows, you can do that with the Vanguard, but your brain is gonna get brain blasted by mind thrust, all the mind thrust.
Oh no.
Another thing. Yeah, I hope you do. I hope you like Mind Thrust, because the GMs are gonna see you and go, that right there, that's a brain I can fry. But another thing that makes the Vanguard cool is the fact that the Vanguard is going to have more stamina points than any other class in the game. And the reason for that is, despite having the same number of stamina and hit points per level as the Soldier and the Solarian, the Vanguard's key ability modifier is Constitution. So that like 5, 6, 7 modifier, yeah, you're adding that straight to your stamina every level. You have so many hit points. It's kind of insane.
And it's great because it's in stamina, which is the one that regenerates really easily. So exactly. You can really take a beating in an individual fight and you're like, give me a minute.
Yep. Give me a minute. I got this. So the other thing that's really cool about the Vanguard, at least in my opinion, is that it's sort of like a more resource intensive version of the Solarian. And that's really weird to say, because the Solarian has like the really cool revelation system where mm-hmm. you have points and you move back and forth between proton and graviton, unless right. you're me and you just go proton, nothing but proton.
Same.
But yeah. Exactly. Proton is great. Who would not want to worship the sun goddess? But
yeah, that does seem like a lot of bookkeeping. So how does the Vanguard have more bookkeeping than that?
They have a mechanic called the entropic pool. And so what the entropic pool is that when someone attacks you, you actually store the entropic energy of your own body falling apart based on like the wounds, like your flesh tearing apart, your life force slowly draining out of your body. You store that entropic energy inside of you. And you can use that energy to do powerful abilities. There's like an entire list of different conditions that cause you to gain entropy. And then you have a special ability that lets you spend entropy in order to make your attacks even more powerful. And that ability is called Entropic Strike.
Okay,
Entropic
really quick. Good. I don't mean to cut you off, but I have a quick question. So we keep using this word entropy. Yeah. And entropy, as far as I know, it is basically just decay, right?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Okay. How does entropy factor into all this? It's kind of hard to me to think about like decay without, and excuse me for getting Warhammer 40K here, but like Nurgles, you know, of like a disease and horror. Like, how does that work in this concept?
It's very, very Nurgly, actually.
Really? Okay.
So the idea behind entropy as it's presented in Starfinder is that it's just the force of nature that is the fundamental energy of your body and the world around you just going away. And like I mentioned, for the Vanguard, they generate entropy when things beat them up. Their own injuries, the entropy and decay of their body as they are wounded, is what fuels their power. They're able to take that inherent property of the universe, the idea that all energy eventually subsides. Mm-hmm. It's a very nihilistic property, in fact. And mm-hmm. they're able to use that idea and take that energy, and they're able to use it to inflict that same entropy on other people. They store their entropy and they unleash it at others. It's really cool.
Okay. So now that I have that concept down a little more, I think I'll be able to understand sort of from a thematic viewpoint how this class works. Now, if I recall, so we were talking about the entropic pool, and you were going to tell us, so and we can get these points in this pool in various ways, including getting damage, like you just talked about, and then we can focus it into an entropic strike. So go ahead and explain that.
So the idea behind the Entropic Strike is that it's kind of like a Solarian weapon. It's a special attack that you're able to make either with your body or with a weapon you're wielding. It doesn't matter which way you choose to do it, but if you choose to make your strike through a weapon, you get to add all of your weapon special properties to your Entropic Strike. But no matter whether you're just touching somebody or you're smacking them with a pike, you do the same amount of damage in both cases. The Entropic Strike damage is set. And the idea is that it is always an energy attack, so it always goes against EAC, mm-hmm. and it can be either bludgeoning or it could be acid. You get to choose the damage every time you strike.
Okay, we're not talking about like a wet solution of acid, though, right? We're just talking about like it's dissolving things in there.
Yeah. So okay. It's the same. It's the same principle as for how like what is it, James? What's the name of the weapon that Robin loved in our Dead Sons game?
So it's the disintegrator.
Yeah, those.
Yeah, the thing of entropy is a degeneration in the chaos. Mm-hmm. So like just an ordering of a system, which decay kind of looks like, and that's kind of the thing that they go for here. But yeah, it's taking that and just undoing the order that is in something.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's acid damage in the way that like a disintegrator pistol is acid damage because it's destroying it down to its atoms. It's pulling it apart.
Exactly.
It's actually like the disruption weapons.
Oh, that's from, disruption.
Yeah, from the Dead Sons Adventure Path. It's okay. A lot like those, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Very cool.
And
okay.
So what happens is that you can actually throw, like, so you have this pool of points, and you get the points from being beat up. And as you get higher level, different actions will also cause you to generate points based on different choices you make for your character. And when you make the Entropic Strike, you can actually spend your points into this strike, and every point you make adds a bonus d4 to the damage. And what's really cool about this is that if you really wanted to, you could store like your points for like an entire combat at level 1 and end up throwing like 3, 4, 5d6 into this one attack if you really wanted to.
Oh, geez.
Like there's no limit to the amount number of points you can spend.
Oh, really?
You just have to be able to take the damage to dish it back out.
Is there a maximum in your entropic pool?
No, I don't think there is a maximum in your entropic pool. I think it's just you store the energy.
You can have a maximum number of EP in your pool equal to your con mod.
There you go, your con
modifier.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's going to be pretty high considering mm-hmm. Constitution's your main stat. So even at level one, I suppose you could get up to 4. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
You're talking about a 4d4 attack with the bonus damage and then the 1d3 plus your con on top of that. Entropic Strike is unique that at first level, instead of adding your strength to damage, it adds mm-hmm. your con to damage. You eventually get to add your strength at higher levels, but at lower levels, like when you first start, you add your con. So it's still going to hit for like an average of 6 damage, which is pretty good for an energy weapon at first level.
So coming from someone whose last punch girl was a Solarian, and just like Nightrace says, proton all the way. Coming from someone like that, I am used to augmenting my solar weapon as a Solarian with those crystals. Is there a way to sort of augment your entropic strike damage, or is it just what's on the chart?
So it's just what's on the chart plus what you add from your entropic pool. There is no way to get more damage to it. The Vanguard is not as high damage as the Solarian. So if you want to punch somebody and have it do the biggest possible number, you're probably better off going Soldier or Solarian.
Gotcha.
But the advantage of the Vanguard is that the entire class is built around the idea that you will take more punches and you can take it, and you want to be punched.
Okay, yeah, so their defense is higher. I know that's one thing with the Solarian is they can get a little, even with having a high number of hit points, they can get a little squishy. They don't have a lot of great defensive abilities, whereas the Vanguard just seems to be all defensive abilities, which is kind of fun. And if you don't really need to worry about your weapon other than properties, you know, if you want reach, you get a pike at level 1, you never change it, because you don't really care that the damage has to scale. So you're not buying a new weapon every other level. You can spend that money on better armor, cool mods, shields.
Yeah, well, especially because shields were given in this book as well. Mm-hmm. So along with the Slayer, you suddenly have all this cash flow. Because when you are a armor weapon character in Starfinder, especially if you're in society, your wealth is pretty limited, where you're always like 3 levels behind, basically.
There is one thing that's worth noting. If you use an item that's lower level than your level, you have to use the lower of your Vanguard level or the item's level to determine how much damage you do. So if you use a level 5 weapon and you're only level 1, you're doing level 1 damage because you're level 1. But if you're level 5 and you use a level 1 weapon, you're doing level 1 damage because the weapon isn't strong enough to handle your entropic energy. So if you want to add those properties, you still have to boost and have a good weapon, but there is some flexibility in how you do it. For example, like for Vanguard, the entropic strike damage doesn't increase from 1d3 to 1d4 until third level. So at level 2, if you stick with a first level weapon, it's not a big deal.
Gotcha.
Or you can usually be a level or two higher.
It is a little strange where it's like the same damage for two levels, one level, three levels. It's like it's kind of all over the place. You really got to look for those benchmarks. Although at higher levels, it's like constantly going up. I think I'm still just going to use my fist. Those are always my level.
Yeah. Obviously, I'm not Owen, but if I had to guess, the reason it probably goes up like that is that it's probably mirroring how the average damage of actual weapons go up.
Sure.
So that it can try to keep that being pretty close, where like you don't need to have a new weapon at every item level.
Mm-hmm.
Because Starfinder, I don't know how you feel about it, James, but I know for me, like if my weapon isn't equal to or greater than my item level, I get kind of antsy. But the game really isn't designed that you have to have an armor and weapon that are at the same level. You can usually be a level or two or behind and be fine.
Yeah. I think it also goes around the math, because like I'm just comparing it to like the old monk tables in Pathfinder 1e, mm-hmm. and yeah, those tend to be more consistent with your average weapon damage at that point too. So it just shows, man, the math on Starfinder really is logarithmic, but not as the same way as Pathfinder.
Definitely. Yeah, it's
a little bit kinder slope.
Yeah, I think that Starfinder's math, like for a lot of these progressions, it's more designed with the average in mind. Whereas mm-hmm. I think that first edition Pathfinder and third 3.5 edition D&D, which it was based off of, was probably designed more around the aesthetic of the number going up rather than the actual like average that would happen when you punch somebody.
Probably. It's like we want the numbers to go up, but they'll go up in a pretty way. And then it's like, yes, but this is super inconsistent.
Yes. Agreed. But hey, talking about stuff that go up in a pretty way, having a weapon that you turn into your entropic strike isn't the only way to add weapon special properties to your entropic strike. At fifth level, there's an ability called Entropic Attunement that makes it so that there's like an ever increasing list of weapon special properties and abilities that you can just choose and add straight to your entropic strike. It's really cool. So if you wanted to be Punch Girl, you could pick the best punches applied in any situation. One good example is that at fifth level, you could take the penetrating weapon special property, which is a weapon special property that makes it so that your punches ignore hardness on what you punch equal to the item's level. And because your entropic strike's item's level is always equal to your level, you basically have the best penetrating weapon you possibly can for punching down starship hull doors. Don't try to do that. It's really hard. James had people at his table who tried. It was bad.
Oh, God, the bad memories. Listen, just punch robots. Robots are hard so you can get through.
Punch the robots. Don't punch the starships.
Spoiler alert. I want to punch a starship. I'm just.
It's going to be really difficult. It's got like hardness 20 at first level.
Yes, but I'll ignore some of it.
At 10th level, you also have the ability to add the reach special property, which is good. And at 13th level, you can add the blast special property with a range of 20 feet, so you can start like Kamehameha waving your disintegrate, which is pretty cool.
What level can you do that?
13. And it's one of the few things that you actually, well, not few things, but it's one of the things that you like start to actually spend multiple points of entropy for, because everything is usually a one-to-one trade. You spend one entropy for one this, but that's two entropy. Oh no, you're going to get punched that much.
This is so cool.
Yeah, and the other thing that's really cool about the Kamehameha wave on Tropic Strike is that currently in Starfinder, it is the only Paizo official way to get a blast weapon special property on a melee attack, because it doesn't say that. I mean, I guess the blast weapon property probably says that it's a ranged attack, which is fine, but it's just really funny. And it goes up as you get higher, like at 16th level, that goes from 20 feet to 30 feet. And then at 19th level, it goes from 30 to 60 feet. So you can just punch people entire rooms away with your body decoupling acid. It's great.
Give That's me amazing. Your energy. Ow, ow, ow.
Hey, as long as you can use it, right?
You also get the ability to add critical effects to your Entropic Strike starting at 7th level. You can do things like knock down, staggered, corrode. It's like, oh, guess what? My thing hits you and your atoms just keep falling off while we're fighting. Enjoy.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, crit effects usually aren't super hype, I don't feel, but you do get flashing strikes similar to, who gets flashing strikes? Operatives?
Mm-hmm. Solarian gets them. Solarian, yeah.
There's so many abilities that do a very similar thing that have similar names, but you get that, so you're going to be doing that more often.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like you get that eventually 11th level. That's pretty cool. Staggered is an amazing critical effect that's available, which is great when you're fighting those creatures that have, you know, multiple attacks or are have such a high attack bonus, they'll probably full attack you anyway. So if you can stagger them, you can save yourself a lot of pain.
Yeah. Speaking of saving yourself a lot of pain, the Vanguard has a lot of really strong defensive abilities, some that it borrows from other classes and some that it has unique to itself. A good example of this is called Mitigate. It's a special reaction that you can take whenever you take damage, and you just reduce the damage you take by your Vanguard level. You can't gain entropy points when you use Mitigate, but when you mitigate, you can, it actually by default stacks with any energy resistance or damage reduction you have. So you can just be like, boom, the attack does nothing. But
that's cool.
Yeah, like the enhanced thing, resistance where you get DR equal to your hit die or your base attack bonus.
Oh, that's a must. So,
So you get double basically.
But the other funny thing that you can do with mitigate is that it also has an ability that if you're getting damage reduction, energy resistance, or an armor class bonus from any effect, you can just turn it off. You can just say, I don't get that. And you might say, but Alex, why would you want to turn that off? And the answer is that...
why would you want to turn that off?
Yeah. The idea is that if you're fighting things that are weaker than you, they might not be able to overcome your damage reduction. They might have trouble hitting you. And if they can't hit you, you can't generate entropy points. So if you really want to, you could just turn your defenses off and be like, hit me. Offer my flesh to you. And they just start punching you and you gain your entropy. And then you hit them for like a million and they're gone.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. This class is amazing.
So there's some things you can also do that I remember from the playtest, like spending a resolve, which is really just like throwing wood into a fire to get entropy. It's like the slowest and least efficient way. Did not realize this was in here. Take two move actions in the same turn to move your speed each time. You just run around in circles until you get entropy. I didn't realize that was, oh boy.
I remember getting that in the playtest because one of the things that I have for this sort of build is just also to be really fast. Like if you're a melee character and you want to get hit, you want to be able to get up into wherever the is right away. And if you end up with one of these spread out shooting battles using a huge battle mat, you know, you need to move from one end of the field to another in quick time. And this is a fantastic ability because you're like, cool, I have to double move to get over there anyway. I might as well generate an entropy point while I'm at it and use that to punch them next turn.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the cool thing about that is that you can do that, what you just said, but you can also combine it with a charge. Now, there are disadvantages to this being that in Starfinder, charges give you attack penalties and armor class penalties, but you also get a plus 10 foot bonus to your speed when you do it and you move double your speed and still get the attack at the end. It's pretty good. But the thing that's broken about it that our friend is doing in I shouldn't say it's broken as in like it's super overpowered, it's really not, but the thing that you can do with it that our friend is currently doing in our Signal of Screams game is that you can combine it with the ferocious charge a universal creature rule, which on uplifted bears get as for free as part of their PC traits, and ferocious charge takes away the penalties for charging. So if you are an uplifted bear vanguard, and uplifted bears have a base movement speed of 40 feet. With that, you could spend the point, charge up to 100 feet in a straight line, attack, and make no penalties. It's great.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It's really great until he gets caught in a 5-foot hallway, but
no, listen, it's totally his fault that every single adventure we've been doing is like in an office building. So like he's like,
oh my gosh. It's great. Quick sidebar, that is a challenge. One of the things you have to sort of adjust your thinking for when writing for Starfinder is those like 5 or 10 foot hallways, because there are a lot of races out there, or species, I should say, even though they're still called races, that are, you know, large size. And so it's
definitely,
It's not uncommon to be like, okay, who do we have in our party today? Oh, half of you are large. Okay. And if the adventure has 5-foot hallways and little tiny 5-foot doors, That's going to be uncomfortable. And so even when creating the maps, you have to sort of think, are there supposed to be large creatures coming in and out of here on the regular? Because if so, you better have some big doors and some big hallways.
Yeah, right. Like, is this an old temple for like a bunch of Versa Verthani? Yeah, it's probably 5 feet. Is mm-hmm. this a business center for Dragonkin? Yeah, why do you have 5 foot hallways here? Nobody can move in here.
We told him that he should just go to the Verthani shop and buy a lot of polymorphic serums. And he's like, I'm not spending my potions on that. And then immediately 10 minutes later, why are these hallways so small? It's like, you could have solved this problem. This is a problem you inflicted on yourself.
And also you'd like this as well, Vanessa. At 15th level, they basically get pounce. Yep. As a full action, they can take a move action to move, and then they get the full attack. Or they can do it in between, or the movement can occur in between the full attack as well.
Yeah, that ability, so uncanny speed, it's basically Dervish Dance. You take that move action, and you take the attacks from your full attack at any point during that movement. It's awesome.
That is awesome, because you can be fighting one person.
James is right. It is incredibly cool.
Yeah. You can be fighting one person and you finish them off like nice and quick, maybe an unexpected critical or something. And then you're like, oh, the next enemy is over there. That's fine. I'll just move over there and keep full attacking.
Yeah, it's not Barty Allen, but it's good. It's really fun. The other cool thing they have.
Did you mean Barry Allen?
Wasn't your character's name Barty Allen?
No, Barry Allen, The Flash.
Oh, I thought that you changed his name from Barry Allen.
I did not.
My apologies.
I fully ripped off. He's talking about a Pathfinder character that we played together with once. I fully made Barry Allen the Flash. It was a complete tribute character. It was not original other than the build. So, yeah. And yeah, you could try to build him in here, but he just wouldn't be fast enough. You'd have to.
Yeah, he wouldn't. But if you, one thing that the Vanguard can do to be really fast is that at 7th level, they actually get the operative's uncanny agility ability, where mm-hmm. they're immune to the flat-footed condition, and flanking doesn't give any bonuses against the Vanguard, and covering and harrying fire don't provide any damage against the Vanguard. So they are just, they're like really hard to take down. It's, that ability is annoying on an operative. On a Vanguard who has a ton of hit points, it's like, oh my gosh, please spare me, Vanguard Master.
That's so cool. Gosh, I love
this. So what
this.
Other cool abilities are there, James?
I mean, there's only like disciplines and aspects, you know, your actual choices.
Ah, I liked Invulnerability, their capstone. Did you read that one?
I've never seen anything get the 20. I just ignore the capstones. That's what does fair. The capstone do?
They're kind of fun.
So once per day as a reaction, a Vanguard becomes immune to all weapon special properties that impose a penalty on them or grant the attacker a bonuses against them, as well as being immune to all combat maneuvers, conditions, critical hits, and critical effects. And when you use invulnerability, you could take 3 reactions for a round. And invulnerability, that whole state lasts for a full minute.
What?
Yeah, it's insane. You're immune to basically everything except damage, and you can take 3 reactions a turn.
Nah, that's
so
cool. Good.
It's so cool.
Yeah, they have reactive. They can take more than one reaction a turn. We skipped over that part.
We did. Once per day, you can take a bonus reaction in your turn, and then as you level up, you can do that more often. It's very cool. But you know what? You mentioned the other two class features that kind of form the flexibility of the class. Because everything we've said up to this point is mm-hmm. like the things that pretty much all Vanguards have.
Right.
Until they get mm-hmm. alternate class features eventually.
Yeah, so
but
how do
for
I...
For now, the things... Yeah,
so how do I differentiate my Punch Girl from, like, Ira, the pike-wielding rage bug on Stellar?
Yeah. So, well, James, why don't you tell us about aspects?
So aspects are a group of 6 choices. Six. How many were there in the playtest? I wish I had the document in front of me.
I think there was like 10. There was definitely more.
There was more. So there's 6 choices that are kind of like your soldier combat styles okay. that go about what you do. You get like different powered tiers. You get your initial one, they give them really weird terms, insight, embodiment, catalyst, and finale. Finale, I believe, is at 18th level. So some of these kick on earlier, some of them later. Each one of them gives you the choice of a combat maneuver. They're Sunder, Trip, Reposition, Bull Rush, or Dirty Trick, which I like to see.
Yeah, like the improved combat maneuver feat, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then they each give a separate benefit that tends to go in line with what the theme of the aspect is, like... There's Boundary, Cascade, Exergy, Inversion. They're all basically riffs on thermodynamics.
Oh, okay. What's
yeah,
Exergy?
Or God, I looked this up.
So it says you embody the total amount of potential work the energy in a system can perform when accessed by entropy. So is that like saying, like being able to access, say, a battery is like potential work the energy there can perform?
The exergy of a system is the maximum useful work possible during a process that brings a system into equilibrium with its reservoir. So it's the maximum amount of work you'd get out of something. It's okay. As the farthest the rubber band can snap after you pull it back.
Oh, I get it. Okay, cool.
This is why we needed the code switch guy here for the Vanguard episode, because he's the only one who could tell us what this stuff means.
Yeah, I had my option of physics or chemistry in high school, and I chose chemistry. So
you had sciences in school? Yo.
I did.
each one has a bit of a different flavor. I'm not going to go down the whole list. Sure. I think my favorite is, or the one that I like the most, is just inversion.
Okay.
Because their catalyst allows you to regain stamina points equal to twice your Vanguard level when you are getting stamina points.
Oh, okay.
And when you're using something that has, Okay. Sorry. There's a way that this could go with an envoy, if I had read this right when I was doing testing or like looking over it, where usually when you regain stamina, you get all of it at once.
Okay.
The envoy and now the biohacker are something that give you stamina that might not be your whole amount.
Right. They give you a set amount.
Right. So this would allow that to increase because you are there.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool.
Very cool.
That is.
I am a big fan of reaction personally.
Okay. Why are you a fan of reaction?
Well, I think that the abilities in reaction have really cool synergy with themselves. The insight ability gives you improved combat maneuver dirty trick as a bonus feat.
Okay.
And then when you get to the embodiment ability, once per combat, when you impose a condition on an enemy, you gain an entropy point without doing anything else. So you could just be like, all right, I'm going to use my dirty trick feat to make you shaken. And oh, guess what? Now I have this extra entropy point. I just think that that has a really cool synergy. And then like when you get to the catalyst and you use the catalyst ability, when you trigger that, each foe within 30 feet has to make a saving throw or get sickened for one round per level you have. And that would also trigger the ability to gain an entropy point from aspect embodiment. I just think that how that one particular option is all about putting conditions on enemy is really cool.
That is cool. I know for my punch girl, I'll probably take momentum. Momentum, you get improved combat maneuver bull rush, which of the combat maneuvers sometimes is not the best, but it is pretty cool when you want to, say, push a baddie away from your technomancer or your envoy who's getting beat down. So that's pretty cool. And if you've got interesting terrain to play with, you can sometimes do interesting things with bull rush. So I'm not mad about it. But the thing I really like is that aspect embodiment, which is similar to what you were saying before, where once for combat, when you move a distance greater than your normal speed in one turn, so that's a double move, a full run. It even says if you have like a special bonus, like an enhancement bonus or something to your movement that lets you go faster than your normal maximum, you just get an entropy point just once per combat. And that's the thing I was saying, cool. Like if you need to reposition, like get on the other side of the battlefield, boom, free entropy point. I like that one.
I like how for momentum that their finale ability, which is that and that capstone they get, they can cast telekinetic projectile at will's spell-like ability, but instead of doing that cantrip, that zero level spells damage, you do your entropic strike damage. So you're just like, here, enjoy my zero level spell. And then you have like our friend Tom, who's like a baller mystic. Oh, that's just telekinetic projectile. That's not gonna hurt. Wait, why are you picking up so many D6s, Robin? No!
Well, even
what do you think? Was that a good impression of Tom?
Yeah,
I think so.
Just throwing disintegrating bricks at people, I love it.
Well, even their catalyst is cool, right? Creatures you select, so not even your allies if you don't want, or certain creatures you like where they're positioned, but creatures you select in a 30-foot radius get pushed away from you, and they move 30 feet directly away from you. Of course, fortitude save to have the distance, but that still means you know you're going to move them 15 feet. Mm-hmm.
They can't stop you. You're moving them. They could just resist.
Yeah, they can move. They can move not as far, but like what I was saying about interesting terrain and such, this is amazing. Imagine one of those like Star Wars-esque catwalk fights, right? And you're just like, oh, stormtroopers, huh? I got this. You just punch the ground. Boom. Everyone flies back 15 or 30 feet off the catwalk. And of course, no one has handrails. So goodbye.
It's also far enough to prevent things from just guarded stepping and just being in your face again, which is often the case with most bull rushes.
Definitely. I also like that, like, a good bull rush can make it so that as a vanguard, you can put somebody in, like, into a hall so where they can't get out of it. And now they can only attack you. Mm-hmm. They want to get to the party. They have to go against this giant wall that has, like, 7 plus 12 hit point stamina points per level. And then they got to carve through your hit points.
So I have a question for you then. Do you think, in general, do you think a build of the vanguard is better with, like, a medium-sized creature or a large-sized creature? Or other.
Oh, that's a really tough one.
Or what about a tiny creature? What if I'm one of those little plants with the little tentacles and I'm a vanguard?
I think the difference in Starfinder is small enough that either option would be good, but bigger race, bigger species do tend to have more base species hit points. Mm-hmm. And so because they have more hit points, that's going to synergize really well with your class. I think what's more important is that if you're talking about being big, having that extra reach on your Entropic Strike is pretty awesome, especially when you get that ability James was talking about, where you can add the reach weapon property on top of that and be like, I have a 15-foot hand. Nobody can touch this.
Yeah, and also at the Kaioken, you get more choices for where you start it from if you're large, so that can help as well.
Okay, so large is a large size race is probably a good option.
It's like 5% better.
It's like 5% better. Okay.
Yeah. I actually think that our friend Peter's choice of being an uplifted bear as a vanguard is a really smart choice, because one of the downsides of being big and having a big reach is that you might end up keeping people far enough away from you that they can't melee you, and you want to be punched to gain entropy points. So by being an uplifted bear that only has the standard 5-foot reach but is large, you kind of get the best of both worlds. you got to be base to base with the thing to punch them, so people are going to punch you. But you're also really big and impossible to get around. It just happens that in most of our games that we can't get around him either. So that sucks.
Yeah, but... so there's always that aspect of having large party members of clogging up the battlefield. So I guess you need more of those potions to polymorph yourself. So
yes, be smaller. Be a teddy bear instead of a big bear.
Be smaller. All right, so you guys were talking about all of these really cool aspects, and you said there was another way to customize your character.
There is.
There's disciplines. Alex, would you mind going through those a little bit?
Sure. The idea behind a discipline is that they're kind of like the Vanguard's version of operative exploits. You get one at second level and every even level afterwards. And it kind of like how the soldier gets bonus feats or the Solarian gets revelations. They're special abilities that the Vanguard can get to really define their playstyle. But the difference for the Vanguard is that most of them interact with like defensive options they have in some way, or they do stuff that makes them better at tanking. A really good example is that they can make it so that they can just draw energy from around them in the environment and channel it into a shield. And they can just create shields out of nothing. And shields are a type of equipment that was introduced in the character operations manual that basically give you a AC bonus. So if you want the maximum possible AC, you don't even have to buy a shield. You just make one out of the latent entropy in the world around you.
Do you think this is the type of shield that our iconic Vanguard is using in the art, page 64?
I think almost certainly they're using that ability. Definitely.
Yeah, that's what, because I was looking, I was like, it looks like an energy shield to me, but I don't see a lot of energy shields in the game. They all seem pretty physical. And so, okay, very cool. That's how I get that ability, because I saw that in the art and I'm like, I want to do that. That's the thing I want to do.
Yes. And awesome. So one of the things, like, since you talked about you liking punch girls, do you like wearing lightly armored punch girls or heavy armor punch girls?
Probably lightly armored. Like, I want to be quick and agile. I am all about the dex builds.
One of the fun things about the Vanguard is, like, you could definitely build a Hulk if you want to. None of the abilities, except for one, say that you can't wear heavy armor. And that one ability is a discipline that, once I say its name, everyone is going to be like, oh, I know what that does, and it's evasion.
Oh.
So there are options built into the class that if you want to be the hulking brute Vanguard, you can do it. If you want to be the nimble monk from Rogue One, who's like, I'm one with the force is with me, and just dodge and like take all the blows and just channel it right back at them, you could do that with this class. This class doesn't force you into being heavy armored or light armored, and it gives you benefits for doing both.
All right. Yeah, because I would definitely make a light armored one. Evasion sounds great to me. I want to be flying around the battlefield at high speeds, and I don't want any heavy armor slowing me down.
And, well, if you want to go ahead, James.
Oh, I was going to say another thing just about their whole choice on the disciplines is like, I just quick controlled F. There's 13 mentions of reactions, and it looks like there's about 10 of those talents that operate off of reactions. So you get a lot of choice to play not on your turn.
Yes.
Which is something I don't really see a lot in other places. And there's only one that has any key off of resolve. And coming from somebody who has most of the playtime in an envoy, a lot of your abilities there use resolve. You just vomit it as do mystics.
Yeah, definitely. I've seen you go through resolve so fast on Mitsuka Hane.
Oh God, I just give it to people so they don't die.
But so one of the things that you can do that you'll probably really enjoy, V, is called Intervene. It's a second level discipline that makes it so that when one of your allies is damaged by an attack, you just take that energy. That you take half of that damage and you just give it to yourself. Like, it's literally like a reaction one-time attack version of Shield Other that you could just do. Just like, it's mine.
Okay.
All for me. You think you can punch my allies? No. I'm going to take your damage and then I am going to punch you.
And it looks like if you have Bodyguard, you don't have to spend an additional reaction to use it either. It just goes on top
exactly.
of it. That is really neat. I like that idea.
Yes, it's super cool. There's a lot of really good, interesting ways that you can protect the people around you. Mm-hmm. The Vanguard is definitely a class that if you have an idea of what kind of tactics your enemies are going to be using, like what types of weapons they favor, how they typically organize their troops, you can build a Vanguard that is good at absorbing specific kinds of attacks and enemy fire. It's really awesome.
Yeah, they tend to have a lot that also focus around area of effects. So just standing in the middle of explosions and just sucking in the explosion.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, I remember one where you could like jump on a grenade that was nearby and just be the only person hit by it. Is that still in here?
Yes.
Sweet.
I believe so. There's a couple that do similar things like giving cover to everybody in the area against those type of effects. There's a couple, which is cool because your reflex is good, so you're probably going to save from these as well.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody's going to be fine instead of... God, what is it? The envoy. Since you tend to have a weird stat priority, you try to help people get from there and you end up getting hurt because your saves tend to be a little bit lower.
Hmm.
Or at least I found out where it's like, hey, save, reflex save, and you just get hurt to the same thing that you saved people from.
Gotcha.
Definitely. There's a lot of really cool options and a lot of them synergize really well. There are several that even let the envoy. There are several that even let the Vanguard take the antagonize feat and get really good at drawing fire with antagonize, which is really cool to see.
Yeah, like a proper like tank.
Yes, it's like a World of Warcraft. I shout at you and you punch me for once. That's really sweet.
Excellent.
I mean, if you are good at being an unlikable person like our Vanguard is, like they'll just punch you without needing to antagonize. Your presence is an antagonistic force. That's
fun. Well, ain't that the truth? What's kind of fun is you can even see from the art that they definitely have the idea of these unarmed fighters because two of the four in the back like don't have any weapons, don't have any shields, are just ready there with their fists. So. Definitely built into the class to build this sort of character, and I think that's really fun.
Yeah, look at that Peacekeeper. Like, she's just got a giant arm for punching, and that is her power. She is the punch lady. It's exactly what you wanted.
Exactly. I'm really excited to build mine. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about the Vanguard before we move on to some news and some other things going on in the Starfinderverse?
I think I'll go first, and you can think about it, James.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think that the Vanguard is a really interesting class because even in Pathfinder 2nd edition and in 1st edition, we haven't seen a class that's built around defense and it hasn't built around taking the hits. Usually classes in these games are built around reacting to problems. And this is a class that's like, I'm going to put myself in front of the problem and I have abilities that make me better at it. Usually like for things like Paladin or Fighter or Barbarian or Soldier or Solarian, it's just like, you put yourself there because that's your strategy and you don't really get anything special out of it. And I think it's really neat to have a class that's contribution is to be like, look, I am incentivized to get beat up for you. Please let me get my face punched in. I think that's
I think an interesting thing about the Vanguard in addition to that is in the whole stat layout, their character skills is a bit higher than you'd expect for what you think of as like a melee character, which I think firmly puts us in the idea of this is a melee fighter class, but it's also a support class.
Yeah.
It's meant to help you in a lot of ways. Like kind of like if you had a monk. I always come back to monk with this because it just reminds me of it so much. But monks, it just takes style feats that protect other people. It's like that, but, you know, put on anime steroids.
The best kind of steroids.
Well, that's really fun. I also like that there's a lot of different ways to build this. Obviously, I have my own sort of theme and ideas coming into this. But like you were saying, there's some great abilities like flatten bullets, where you just take less kinetic damage, but you have to be wearing heavier power armor. And that you could build a vanguard that's walking around in big heavy armor or even power armor and just soak in the hits and be that, like, you know, an unstoppable juggernaut type character. And I think that it's really fun that the class is flexible enough to give you those sorts of things. Is it definitely a melee class? Yes. But, you know, you're going to want it to be standing around and getting hit by all the bad guys and the giant space creatures. So
it's one of those weird ones that doesn't get grenade proficiency natively.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like a main combatant, but no, you can't throw grenades. And it's like, yeah, I don't need to. I'm just going to run in there and
I don't throw the grenades. I am the grenade. It's like Sigma in Overwatch. Sigma would definitely be a vanguard.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
Very cool. All right. Well, moving on to news. There's a couple things happening in the Starfinderverse that we should absolutely take care of, or talk about, rather. The first one that I want to mention is that Amanda Hammond, one of their managing developers, has left Paizo. She has gone over to Kobold Press. She is now their editorial director. So that is a position that I understand is sort of like what Eric Mona does as publisher in terms of helping to not just project manage and such, but like steer the creative direction of the company in ways and coordinate. And she's I think going to be fantastic at that.
Definitely.
So
I think it's,
yeah. Go ahead.
I think that it's sad to see someone that we really like moving away from the game we really like, but it sounds like it's an amazing opportunity for Amanda and it's like the natural next step in her career. So I know that I'm really excited to see what she ends up working on with Kobold, because they're a fantastic company with some really great people.
Absolutely. And I know that she's really excited about this move. She officially started her first day, I believe it was either yesterday or today, and today's the 8th. So this is a brand new thing that just happened, breaking news almost as of this recording. But we're definitely proud of her and happy for her moving on. Now that said, she's still going to be part of Stellar. So you can listen to her on our actual play podcast playing Starfinder here on the network, because she is Ira, the Ragebug Vanguard, as appropriate as that would be.
Yes. The perfect episode just to wish Amanda the best.
Perfect episode.
Although every episode we wish the best for Amanda.
And then the other big piece of news is, of course, yet another new class for Starfinder.
It's like we'll have to do a whole nother episode. Oh gosh.
At some point, yes. But let's you know, let's do it sooner rather than later, maybe. What do you guys, who wants to talk about this? Come on, everyone's waiting to hear. What is the deal with this new
class? So, we don't know a whole lot about it other than its name and its theme. And its name is called the Nanocyte. And it's essentially, the way that I like to think about it is that it's the bad guy from Big Hero 6. You control micro machines and you do stuff with micro machines. Yeah, micro machines. They're the little microbots. And so, like, that's about all we really know for sure about what this class is going to be. The playtest is supposed to come out, like, I think this month in July, but I could be wrong. Maybe it'll be a little bit later. I mean, with things that are going on in the world right now, it's really tough to figure out what schedules are going to be looking like, because as we know, things have been very turbulent, and it seems like there are new turbulences every day. So, you know, it'll get here soon. But I'm excited. I think a new class for Starfinder is amazing. I'm down for it. Give me more content, Paizo. You can't sate my thirst for it.
Yeah, I'm just curious to see what it ends up being, because it seems like such an intersection between the biohacker and the racial fluff of the androids.
Also very mechanic-y. Like, I'm curious to see what makes this class a nanocyte and not just a mechanic with a different name. you know? Yeah. Like, I think that Pathfinder second edition ran in, or not second edition, first edition ran into that problem where we started to see classes that were basically like expanded archetypes. And I don't think Starfinder is old enough to that that's something that we would expect right now. So I'm really curious on what kind of mechanics this class has that really sets it apart from other classes with similar biological machine concepts.
Sure.
Yeah. But hey, that's not all that's coming. Did you hear the news?
Tell us, what news?
The big machines are coming. Pacific Rim is coming to Starfinder.
What?
Oh, yeah. The mecha rules are coming. They're coming. They're going to be playtested. We'll get giant robots.
Yeah, about time.
Yeah, that was announced as part of the new classes one. There's going to be one playtest for a new class, and there's going to be another playtest for giant robots.
Yeah, apparently it's going to work off the same square system as your regular combat and not your starship combat.
Yep, it uses a square grid. It does not use hexes.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at that. It's going to be weird to see how they do the intersection of that with, oh, we did make power armor that was 30 feet tall.
Yeah.
Like, where are they going to separate that now?
Honestly, I'm really happy that they're doing this. I don't want to sound... cantankerous or something when I say it's about time, but like this is something that people have been asking for in Starfinder since the core rule book came out. The core rule book came out and people are flipping through it going, where are the mechs? Where are the mechs? Where are the mechs? Not in there. Okay, fine. Armory. They'll definitely be an armory. Where are the mechs? Where are the mechs? Nope. Okay. Character operations manual. Now I'll have mechs. Where are the mechs? No. Where are the mechs?
Where are the mechs? The answer is in the future, close enough that they're going to be playtested. And I am so excited to see what these are going to look like. Do you have any thoughts based on the, I mean, we didn't tell V that this was going to be one of the things we were talking about. We just told her that we wanted to mention the new class. So you get to see her reaction to the fact that mecha are coming to Starfinder live in front of our entire Twitch audience.
So who it's wants really to great. Run a mech game for me? That's the next question.
I think we need a mech adventure path as well. I think we really do. I mean, it would be a shame as I text Jason Keeley and go mech adventure exclamation point. It would be a shame if we didn't get that.
I mean, it seems to me that if they're going to release a big mechanic like mechs, that you're going to need an adventure to go with it. Whether that's a 3-part, 6-part adventure path, like I don't know. They don't do modules in Starfinder, but if they did, like that would be a good place to put one, just to be like, definitely. Cool. You want to play mechs? All right, here you go. Go play mechs. Like there's an ability.
I love the idea. I like right now, I think that like against the Aeon Throne, like is a good way to go into Signal of Screams because they're the only two three-parters that really line up. But I would love a mech game that was against the Aslanti Empire, but with mecha, so that you could go from against the Aeon Throne to fighting them in giant robots. It'd be great. Make it happen, please, Paizo. Make it happen.
I mean, you guys haven't finished against the Aeon Throne in Stellar yet, so who knows what's going to happen? I suppose we could do that. Dungeon Novice in chat says, can my car be the head of my mech?
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, they do mention multi-user mech and single-user mech. We'll see where they fall in the line of that, of if it's Super Sentai or Pacific Rim or what.
Interesting.
I think the answer is that you can help decide by participating in the Mecha Starfinder playtest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now we know that the Voltron rules for starships are there, because that was announced at PaizoCon, but the big question is, are there going to be Voltron rules for Mecha?
I would hope so. I feel like if there weren't, John Compton is probably reconsidering to how many cheers that he got when he heard that you could build Voltron out of starships. I don't think that like there's no way. There's no way. Like he definitely knows how excited people got. He was on that stream. Like there's no way that that's not going to happen.
Well, I just hope it gets on there. That'd be cool.
I like there to be options for people. When I think of X, I don't think of the Voltron thing. That was always so silly to me. I don't know.
I think that we could have all of them. I think we could both be happy.
I would like us both to be happy.
It is, Alyssa. Most of
that
it
means
you know,
a lot to me.
You might be surprised, and this is a bit of a tangent, but most of my mech experience was with a very rarely played game called Heavy Gear. I don't know if either of you played that.
I've never played. I've heard of it.
Oh, it's fantastic. So it's like 40K and the world, except not nearly as grimdark. But in terms of there's nations and they fight and they're all kind of jerks and no one likes them and they end up blowing planets up. But it's got this kind of fun feel. It's by a company called DreamPod 9, which is this mm-hmm. little Canadian company. And they tried to make their miniatures game, which did fine. And apparently there's a TV show at some point. But yeah, Heavy Gear mm-hmm. was where I got introduced to mechs. And these are these like, I don't know, industrial size mechs that like kind of like Dungeonova said about making the car the head of his mech. They were about the size of like a little two-story building or three-story mm-hmm. building. Like they weren't that big. They were big. It's like the 30-foot tall power armor, right? They were big, but they weren't that big. And they were very like grungy and mechanical. Like most mm-hmm. of the mechs were these, it's like in RoboCop 2, that big mech that exists there that's just a computer, except that you'd have a person in it, like running in a little cockpit. Mm. And it was pretty cool. But it was is a little grungy in its development. One of the neatest things that they had was, you know, like they were two-legged walkers, but they also almost all had like tank tread roller skates on as well. So you could just like eject those down and be on these little treads and just like zip and slide down like a roadway. And then if all of a sudden you had to go off-roading, you just went and like jumped and popped the little treads up and then just started like running with the mech. And it was is kind of cool. But there was lots of there were lots of people with oversized wrenches and way too much engine oil all over them. It was fantastic. So
I did not know this about Voltron. I just Googled it real quick. Apparently, the full complete robot is 328 feet tall.
Huh.
Which is way taller than I would think, because Gundam Unicorn is 65 feet tall, which I thought was pretty tall for a mecha.
Yeah.
Oh, no. He's a small boy. No, very small. Voltron is a big boy.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
So what do you think, James? I mean, you've watched so much of the Gundam animes, and I know that in Iron-Blooded Orphans, like, the way that they handle the Gundams is that they're, like, these ancient, super powerful version of the more common mobile suits that are in the setting. Mm-hmm. Do you think that something like one of those Gundams would be better off as, like, an artifact, or just a really high item level machine?
So it depends on the series, actually. Iron-Blooded Orphans does that. The other ones are the Gundams are the advancement of that. I would have to see where they go with it. If they're keeping with that angle that a lot of this stuff was hinted at from like Demalco, where there's all these big kaiju robot kaijus there, you might want to keep your more powerful stuff as that type of tech lore type stuff. But I mean, in general, you're going to get bigger and nastier, right?
That's true.
Especially if you have competition.
In general,
I'm really excited. I think we got to have James take lead on an episode to review the mech playtest when it comes out.
Oh my god, I have a copy somewhere around here of Mechton Zeta that has rules for mecha combat with the conservation of angular momentum in three dimensions. The game is mind-boggling. It tells you to use your room, or like a living room, as your space, because the scale is so large.
What?
Can't find anybody to play that. I know. They put way too much time into that. It's
great. No one wants to do that. Could you imagine trying to play that and you have like fishing wire and hooks that you're putting into the ceiling and like moving these things around all over the place, and then your parents come in and you're just like some teenage kid being like, what? I had to play this game. It says I have to adjust the velocity every round and then I have to go like, no. Like, why are there Lego hanging from every corner of this room?
You're just like Pepe Sylvia, like, oh no, I got hit by a Warhammer. Where am I now?
Gosh, it's like no, the living room is not space. Take this to your own bedroom. But then I can't get to my bed. Exactly. Go take it. Go.
If my daughter started playing that game, I'd be like, yes, go be a rocket scientist. Go.
Go be a rocket. There's a lot of math in this, Mom.
Learn this game and teach me how to play, oh great daughter of mine.
See, the joke is my school didn't have math, but
your school didn't have math?
No. We had algebra 2 in high school, and that was it. They didn't do calc, trig, none of that.
This sounds like a conversation for another time.
Yeah.
All right, so before we say good night to everyone, is there any shout-outs you guys would like to, anyone or anything that you would like to shout-out to specifically? I can go first while you're thinking about it, because
yeah,
I
go
got
first.
Mine. This is Starfinder adjacent, which is to say it's not Starfinder. However, I am very excited. I am the most excited I've been in a long time because the Legendary Kineticist book for Pathfinder 2nd Edition comes out, quote-unquote, soon. I was told there's a chance it's out by the end of this week. It's probably more like the end of next week. But rest assured, in the first half of this month, there will be a Pathfinder 2nd Edition Kineticist playable rules in print, you know, on print on demand, through your regular channels that you would buy Legendary Games products for. And I am so excited. I am the lead author on the book, developer of it, and worked with Njali and Onyx on this thing, and it is beautiful. I cannot wait till it gets into people's hands. So that is my self-promoting hype, just because I am so excited.
That's awesome. Congratulations.
I'll play that so I don't get crit murdered in 2E all the time.
Well, here's the thing. So it's not high damage the way it was in first edition, because part of the problem in first edition was it was just a bunch of damage in one giant lump. And if you crit, now it's a massive ton of damage in a giant lump, and it was just too darn much. But it's definitely been rebalanced. I don't want to go too much into it here. If you want to know more, definitely go to Twitter. You can find a bunch of hashtag Legendary Kineticist posts by me for behind the scenes talking about different aspects of it. In fact, I still have to write one for today, so I'll be posting one here soon. But you'll find a bunch of those, and they're fantastic. So go check that out.
I just have one question.
Sure.
Is there a telekinesis power that I can lift 2 tons of magma with my psychic mind?
No.
Oh, I love that power in first edition. It was so silly. There was an encounter where, like, it was like a gauntlet. You were basically supposed to ninja warrior, like, jump back and forth between the walls and over a pit of magma. And my telekineticist looked at this magma pit and then looked at the party, and I was like, he was like, I'm not doing that. And then he lifted his fingers up, and the entire bed of magma rose to the ceiling.
Oh, yeah. That was one of the powers in first edition that was deemed one of the things they hated most about kineticists was that power specifically called telekinetic call, where you're like, I spend 1 point, and it's 1,000 pounds per kineticist level. So it's like everything. And it was just, it was too much. So that still exists. Telekinetic call, but it's not quite to the same magnitude. It's based off of bulk. So it's bulk based off your level, and you don't have to spend points to do it. You can just do it. So you still get telekinesis. You can just do and move big, heavy objects around. But it does take a class feat to get. And also it's not nearly on the same scale. You're not picking up castles and going, hey, I wish my castle had an ocean front view. That's fine. Let me just pick it up and we'll just take it to the ocean. It doesn't work that way anymore.
In my heart, I'm going to keep bringing that castle to the sea.
In your heart, you can do that. Any other shout outs you guys would like to shout out?
Do you have a shout out, James?
No, I'm good.
I wrote a article today for guidance, and it is a very charged article. I would recommend checking it out. I think it's a very interesting read. And yeah, I enjoyed it. It was, well, I mean, it's not a topic that's fun to write about. It's about the concept of race and how it's racist in tabletop RPGs. And I put a lot of work into it. I spent the last month reading books on racism and reading articles and trying to gather as much as I could. And then it's sort of a tough thing to write about because you want to use all the language and you want to be scholarly. But I also know that to use everything exactly as written, it's not going to reach my audience. So there's a lot of like, all right, this is what this means. This is what that idea basically means. And there's a lot of kind of like paring down. And so one of the feedbacks I've got on it is that it's very simple. And I was like, it kind of has to be for what I'm trying to
make it accessible.
Yeah, exactly. I was going for accessibility over scholarly, but I did my work. I cite my sources, and it led me to a lot of places where like I picked up another book that I'm reading on it right now too. My sister and I are doing a book club for the quarantine, so I am picking that one as one of my side ventures. I forgot how much I like to read.
Fantastic. Well, that's wonderful. Yeah. All right. Well, this has been a fantastic episode. I'm very excited to build my own Vanguard Punch Girl, who's going to go in and just take all the damage and not care as long as she gets, you know, a 10-minute break afterward. And I think it's going to be cool. So This has been fun. Everyone in chat, thanks for joining us. If you are listening to this on a podcast or some other medium, you can join in with us, joining chat on Twitch. Every Wednesday, No Direction has some sort of live content at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and this week it happens to be No Direction Beyond. We basically do a show about once every 4 weeks, and No Direction Prime, that talks about Pathfinder, is every other week. So definitely come and join us or continue the conversation in our Discord. We have one of the best communities in Discord. It is fantastic. Come, continue the conversation. Tell everyone what you're going to make for your Vanguard, because I am curious to hear about it. Tag me. I will respond. And thank you so much for being here.
Yeah.
Now you can go beyond. With No Direction.
No Direction, yeah.
I thought you weren't going to say us out. I was worried.
I did it. I know how to do it. Except now we talked about it. I feel like I have to do it again. I'm not going to do it again. Good night.
No. Freeze frame.